This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. A Kapaa High School principal made his parents proud. Tommy Cox's parents are educators, public school teachers, and their son was honored with a top award at the Public Schools of Hawaii Foundation dinner last night. The Masayuki Tokioka Excellence in School Leadership Award comes with $25,000, $10,000 as a personal award, and $15,000 for a school project of his choice. Cox started out as an accountant and then moved into the classroom. He'd been principal under Administrator Daniel Hamada until he retired. Cox watched the student graduation rates and athletic wins soar. In 2021, Kapaa's football team became the first ever state champion from Kauai. We caught up with Cox this morning to talk about his reaction to the recognition.
Surprised, definitely surprised, didn't expect it, you know, among those other principals, but definitely were just as deserving. I was quite surprised.
And so your parents are teachers, and I'm sure they were just over the moon.
They were excited. My wife was FaceTiming them and the kids at the time, so they got to see it live.
Yeah, I mean, because they're both public school teachers, you know, and I understand that you didn't start out as a teacher, as an educator, that you were a bean counter.
So I was an accountant. That's what I went to school for and had a career change in my early 20s to get into education.
What was it about being in the classroom that just grabbed you?
I think being around the kids and, you know, I was coaching youth sports at the time and I just really enjoyed being in the classroom and decided to give up the accounting.
Gosh, the rewards just, I'm sure, are so great.
Yes, definitely. It's something I look forward to work every day. It's just a good job to have.
What is it that you would like to share with our listeners about, you know, what this award means?
Yeah, it validates the hard work of our teachers and our staff and, you know, everyone in clerical, custodial, cafeteria, but just the support of the community. I think this is just everybody's hard work up and their support of our school and our kids.
What do you want our listeners to know about the Kapaa community?
I think it's a special place. It's a very tight-knit, smaller community. You know, and our parents and our families, they take a lot of pride in our school and what we do and where their kids attend school and, you know, what they're offered and what the expectations are, but it's a prideful place and it's just a great place to work.
We understand that there are always challenges, you know, whether it finding staff and recruiting teachers or keeping and retaining those educators who the kids really relate to.
That's always a challenge. We're lucky. We have a lot of alumni that teach on campus that have been there for over 30 years. I have a very veteran staff. You know, our turnover rate is very low at Kapaa High School, and I think that's what makes it work. Our teachers are vested in the community. They're vested in the school, and the support that they give is so important to our success.
And what made you want to become an administrator as opposed to being a teacher in the classroom?
I think just being able to see things from a different perspective and really work and support the system as a whole. You know, in the classroom, it was great working with specific students. As an administrator, you know, you really got to step back and take a different view as to what you're doing. And I think the level of reach that you have as an administrator can be very valuable.
And who were your mentors?
Oh, definitely Mr. Amara. I was a vice principal under him for 3.5 years before he retired. Then I took over for him in December of 2018. But he came out of retirement. Now he's the complex area superintendent, so that's great. But he showed me the ropes, and, you know, I took a lot and learned a lot from him and continue to implement, you know, things that he taught me over the years.
Well, you know, I just think of the many principals that I knew, you know, covering education, you know, Pat Hamamoto's and the Catherine Payne's, you know, the folks that started, you know, in the classroom and then went on to become principals and then, you know, went on to run the Department of Education and to chair the school board. You know, their reach and the influence has just been so deep.
Definitely, you know. It's an important position, and I think that the reach is, you know, like I said, it goes a long ways.
So what do you think you will focus on with this award?
With the school funds, we started last year working on tiny homes on campus with our Building Construction Academy, and they actually built a tiny home on campus, fully furnished, roof, tiled, everything. And the next project will be a 20-foot container, you know, with PV and fully sustainable. So that's our hope with this money, to get that project going and finished up next school year.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at shipping containers, something that, you know, we rely on, right? That we see so many on all of our islands. And I guess the whole idea of housing, right? Housing for our people, housing for our teachers, for our staff.
Correct. Yeah, that's a huge issue. Yeah, the teacher housing. And our kids came up with this idea last year about these tiny homes and how they could help maybe the teacher housing issue. And so we ran with it. We have the container, and we're going to use this money to complete the project.
So where will you put this tiny home?
Well, it's going to be on campus. We want to put it on a trailer. You know, you put it on a trailer that it can be mobile, and hopefully we can get some eyes on it and people are interested in it.
So this gives the students who may have an interest in what, architecture, construction, you know, engineering, design.
Welding, everything,
I'm sure that the community has also stepped up to help partner with our children.
Yes. Our community has been very supportive. We got a bunch of community partners that come in. They work with the kids. They work with them not only skills specific to the job, but just those soft skills that they need when they leave us, which is very important for them to hear it, you know, from a business person and not just their teacher, so they understand the importance of it.
Well, I know we hear a lot about how schools are creating academies to foster the creativity of kids who might have an interest or, you know, in one area or another.
I think it's great. It really fits and is tailored to meet the needs of each of the kids, you know, and all kids, not just a specific group. All of the kids are in an academy, and they get their number one choice. So if they choose building construction or business or culinary, whatever it is, that's what we align them to. And all their teachers in that academy stick with them for a few years. So they're able to build relationships and really focus on what they want.
So you're going to take this shipping container on the road to get people's attention about what's possible.
Hopefully, that's the plan.
How far along are you on that project?
So we just got the container in, and hopefully, you know, we got the tools, we got everything ready to go. So our year 2 and 3 students in building construction will start the work, and they got some designs ready, and once they pick the design, they'll get going.
All right. So this award really will help bring this project along.
Definitely.
Any final thoughts?
No, thank you to Island Insurance. We truly appreciate this gift and this award, and it's going to definitely be beneficial for our students.
Well, thank you so much, Tommy. Congratulations. And, you know, I hope to get a peek at that shipping container.
Great, for sure. Thank you, Catherine.
That was Tommy Cox of Kapa'a High School, this year's top public school principal, winner of the Island Insurance Excellence in School Leadership Award.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Ulupono Initiative.
Maui-born musician Lily Miola released a new single this week entitled Hope in the Ashes. She was inspired to write it after last August's wildfires devastated parts of her home island. She also managed to get a few friends to sing or play on the track. You may have heard of them: Willie Nelson, Mick Fleetwood, Paula Funga, and Jake Shimabukuro. Proceeds from the song will be donated to the Maui Food Bank. The Conversation's Rosa Subiono recently got the chance to talk to Miola via phone at her home in San Diego.
If I could change what happened to you, I'd stop the wind from blowing and even let the ocean watch it disappear.
I had written the song after spending a few weeks back home right after the fires, and honestly, I was pretty devastated being home and seeing, you know, the state of the island like that. And, you know, knew a lot of people who lost their homes, and we were trying to save a home when I got back from, you know, some hot spots that were still burning in somebody's backyard, and it was just a bit chaotic to leave, and I ended up having to go back to work and was in the studio and just every day, like, was writing songs, and I didn't feel very focused. All I could think about what was happening back home. And eventually I was working with this girl, Bree Kennedy, who's an incredible artist. She's an incredible songwriter. And we had just met for the first time that day, and we started writing a song. And while we were writing, something came up about the color red. There was like a coincidence. And I was like, why don't we look up the symbolization of red and see what that, you know, maybe we'll get inspired. And there was a article that said Hope in the Ashes. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I looked over at her and I said, do you know what's happening where I come from? And we both just, our jaws dropped. And I asked her, I said, can we please write a song called Hope in the Ashes? And so after we finished the other song, I picked up a guitar, which I don't normally play. And there's this thing called an ebow, and it vibrates the strings and makes this like kind of haunting noise. And I was playing with that and it just started vibrating the sound. And it just came out. I was like, all that I'm asking is for hope in the ashes. And then the song was done within like probably an hour. It just fell out. So then I was still pretty consumed in what was happening and how I could be helpful, and didn't think it was the right time to put out the song. And I was like, how can we make this song benefit the people of Maui and the people that were affected? And I was like, you know, I'm going to try and see if I can get some Hawaii-affiliated artists on the song to see if they'd like to share the message with me. And, you know, we'll attach it to a nonprofit, which we have, the Maui Food Bank, and hopefully raise some money and also comfort some people with the message of the song. So I did some networking and was able to get some really incredible, inspiring people on the song. And some of them I've, you know, been dreaming of working with since I'm 11 years old. So it's been a really, really beautiful experience. And I'm just so happy we're able to put it out. And the response has been very, very amazing.
Your lyrics are always very strong and thoughtful, not just in this song, but in all of the songs that I've heard. Daydream was the first song of yours that I heard. I was very impressed with your word choices and your lyric structure and your ability to create such clear images with them. The lyrics in Hope in the Ashes, I think they're equally as strong. And I think the lyrics that are especially impactful are, if hearts can break and hands can mend, can a million little pieces fill the void we're feeling, make us whole again?
If hearts can break and hands can mend, can a million little pieces fill the void we're feeling, make us whole again?
And I feel like that's the question that many, if not all of the fire survivors, are asking themselves in some form or another. How do you hope your song will bring hope to them as they go on their journey to find that answer?
I don't know. I just hope that they find comfort in it and know that they're not alone, and give them hope that, you know, this is a moment of craziness and darkness, and, you know, eventually we'll look back and obviously it'll be so sad still. But I think that we're all going to grow from it and hopefully be able to rebuild. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, it's hard to make money in the music industry, but hopefully I can be a helpful person there raising money with this song, and so we'll see.
I first heard your single over the credits of Uncle Bully's Surf School.
And
I felt like your song just made that film so much more impactful, especially since it played over the credits. I mean, it made you want to watch all the way to the very last second of the film, very last, you know, word on screen. So I feel like in a lot of ways, your song can be a voice for the people that maybe aren't ready or don't know quite know how to express what they're feeling.
Oh, thank you. I mean, hearing that is definitely a goal of mine. And also just writing the music and getting things off of my chest is healing. So the fact that it, you know, potentially could help others would be a dream come true.
And like you mentioned, all proceeds from the sale of your single will go to Maui Food Bank, which recently sent out a press release saying that since the August wildfires, monthly distribution has surged from 250,000 pounds of food a month to nearly 800,000 pounds of food a month. Can you talk a little bit more about that need and how people can help?
If you go to the Maui Food Bank's website, they'll have all the information there that you need to get involved. I'm just so happy that they're taking on this project because it honestly wasn't easy to find people somehow. You think that it'd be a easy task, but we went through a lot of different people and a lot of different organizations, and this one was, they were happy to take it on. So I'm just grateful for that. And yeah, to anybody who's wanting to get involved there, please go to their website and check out what you can do to help.
That's a little shocking to learn, but I'm glad it worked out with Maui Food Bank. It seems like that's the perfect partnership. When you think about victims of any natural disaster, it seems like providing for their basic needs is the start of hope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's so wild thinking about it all. And everything changes day to day. I feel like when I was home, there's different things happening, different people going and volunteering and different sites, and they need this. Oh, but they need this now. And it was wild to see what was unfolding day by day there, especially right after. And I know that needs change, but we'll always be hungry.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Lily.
Wonderful. Thank you. All that I'm asking is for
hope in the ashes. That was Maui musician Lily Miola talking with HPR's Russell Subiono about her new single, Hope in the Ashes. You can listen to the song on all streaming platforms, and all proceeds from the single will benefit the Maui Food Bank.
Support for HPR comes from Mobi, a Hawaii wireless company serving the island since 2005, committed to providing personal service to each customer, featuring a locally based customer care team. Learn more at mobi.com.
It was a little more than 8 months ago that a bronze statue of Mahatma Gandhi located at Kapi'olani Park was toppled off its base. The sculpture was badly damaged and broken in several places. Initially, the city wasn't sure if it was just high winds that brought it down. It happened the same day that Lahaina Town burned. But the artist charged with restoring it suspects that vandalism played a part as well. We caught up with Kim Duffett putting the final touches on the Gandhi art piece. The damage was extensive, cracked in multiple places, there were hammer marks on the face, and part of the bronze staff was missing. Duffett has had a nearly decade-long relationship with the statue, which explains why he cares that it be properly restored.
The right arm was busted off. His staff was busted in multiple places. And his face had been damaged, and his glasses had been all mangled up, as well as multiple cracks on the legs and the body from the fall.
So you really had to kind of put them together?
Absolutely. Kind of a Humpty Dumpty thing.
And so you have had a relationship with this statue. Talk about what happened, was it 2016?
Right. My wife and I have a Latin jazz band, and we've been performing for the Gandhi Day celebrations for many years. So back in 2015, right after we had done our performance and after the ceremony, I turned around and I looked at the piece and I realized how dark the actual original patina was. Kind of like what you see in the Rodin style, that black look. And so many people, I would tell them, oh, meet me at the Gandhi statue, and they wouldn't even know that there ever was a Gandhi statue here because it just disappeared in the shadows. Literally, you could be 15 feet away from it and you wouldn't even notice there was a statue there. And having done patina on many sculptures, my own and others, I knew immediately that what it needed was a change of patina. So I suggested that to the group, and then with Marcia Joyner and Adela Chu, we formed the Friends of the Gandhi Statue in Waikiki, LLC, and offered a gift to the city of changing the patina and putting some informational plaques on the pedestal that would talk about Gandhi and share his story and how he became the famous mentor of peace to so many.
And you had the blessing of the artist to change the patina of the statue.
Right. Mocha insisted that I get permission. And so I had to track him down. It took some sleuthing. I found him in Oklahoma. He's part Shawnee. And he and a friend were in Boston back in 1989. He sculpted this piece, and his friend sculpted the piece that's in San Francisco in an abandoned church.
And so this process of actually then restoring the statue, it took a while.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I made a proposal, did a presentation to the council for the city's art, and they approved my proposal and the gift. And then we had to raise about $15,000 to do the work. So we had all that fundraising. And then we got into doing it on site. So I had to build a whole sandblasting cage and sandblast it and do the patina and the tile repair and all of that. So I have an intimate relationship with it. And the whole idea was to give it a light terracotta patina that reflects light better and shows the shape. And during the day and during the night, it just stands out. And immediately once it was done, we started having people come and, oh, where did this come from? It had been there for 26 years, and they hadn't even realized that it was there.
It was in the shadows.
Right. So that was the patina that it had up until this past August when it fell over. So that's the patina that I replicated with the repair.
You know, when this is rededicated and blessed, I guess maybe people will have an appreciation, you know, given the times that we're living in right now.
Right. And Gandhi had a message of nonviolence against the violence that we see now, the difficulties, the political difficulties, conflict resolution, a way to communicate with people, you know, listen to people, don't interrupt them, and then come back with a point of view that they can hear and listen to as well. And through that conscious listening, caring and empathy for the other person, you can cultivate peace. And that's what we need right now. Take a breath, listen to the other person, let him know that you're actually paying attention to him, and then they'll listen to you. And from there, you can start find common denominator, you know, and start working solutions.
Does this statue present any unusual problems compared to, say, some of the other statues that you've installed yourself, you know, your own work or other people?
You know, when you get an old house and you do a repair, you often find that doing a repair on something that was, certain parts were done poorly, requires more work and time. Yeah, the anchoring system was a weakness on the piece. There were casting imperfections in it, but it's a great opportunity to fix all that, and that's what I did. So all the new anchoring system, that's all marine grade stainless. It's engineered for 120 mile per hour hurricane winds. I always engineer my installations for that. And in fact, these days, you almost have to go for 160 mile per hour winds. It's that serious. So I've done a lot of installations, not just on my own work, but for the State Foundation for Culture and the Arts, artists that have commissions with them, with the city, and with, you know, hotels and other organizations. So I'm well versed in how to do it properly.
Any other accommodations you're having to make just with climate change? I mean, you know, obviously stronger winds, that kind of thing, but being so close to the elements here, to the ocean.
Right. So the piece has been waxed after the patina, waxed twice. It's not lacquered. It's a natural wax. And for a piece in this location with this much salt air and sun and everything like that, we have to, you know, do that every 6 months. Normally, you'd be able to do it once a year to do a waxing. Like the three Kahiko dancers in front of the Hilton Wine Village, those are mine. I do that once every year. I invite everyone to come and see the piece again with a fresh viewpoint. Take the time to read the plaques that are attached to the pedestal. Back in 2016, we created new plaques that actually talk about Gandhi and how he developed his philosophy and what it means. And a lot of people ask, well, why is there a statue of Gandhi in Hawaii? What's the connection? And actually, there's a great connection of philosophy and empathy and heart that, you know, is reflected in aloha, in being pono and respectful, in working things out, ho'oponopono. That's very much where Gandhi was coming from. So I think it's really appropriate. And so we added extra plaques to the piece to talk about that and allow this to be a moment where people can learn. He's a mentor for conflict resolution and peaceful thinking and being today, for people today, which I'm sure your listeners will agree is something we need terribly. We really need to work ourselves out of this. Think positively.
Think positively, let there be light. Duffett intends to get the Mahatma Gandhi statue back on its pedestal by the end of the month, and he expects a rededication ceremony to happen soon after.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Honolulu Waldorf School and Noheia Gallery.
Thank you so much, Savannah. You know, Kim Duffett's work as a sculptor is featured in a new book that was just released this week by Mutual Publishing. As we just heard, some of his art pieces are showcased in Waikiki as well as on the neighbor islands. They include musicians like Gabby Painui and Don Ho. Author Cheryl Soon had high praises for Duffett's work, which is featured in her latest book entitled Remembering History and Honoring Culture. Here's Soon.
Kim has a beautiful sculpture of Spark Matsunaga in Hanapepi at Storybook Theater. Kim is one of these people who has always devoted his life to peace. And Spark Matsunaga is also known for the same reason in his Peace Institute and a lot of the programs at UH that were a spinoff from Spark Matsunaga. Of course, we know him, you know, as a senator from Hawaii. But in this particular depiction, he's not wearing a congressional lawmaker hat. He's walking alongside a young girl. And it's a very beautiful sculpture that is worth taking a trip, you know, to Hanapepi just to see that statue. Across the street is a statue at a Japanese temple that's actually no longer active, and it's Kuan Yin, and she's a beautiful veiled depiction of a woman for peace. We have a peace memorial in Hilo for the Peace Corps. It's to John F. Kennedy and the Peace Corps, because many, many people from Hawaii trained for the Peace Corps, and after they completed their Peace Corps tour, came back and lived in Hawaii. There's like an alumni corps. And when John Kennedy was assassinated, they got together and raised the money for this peace memorial. And we have them on all islands. So it's a nice thing to think that, yes, we've had a lot of experiences with war, but we've had a lot of people devoted to peace, and that's really important. I have a whole chapter just on peace statues and memorials in Hawaii.
This book, feeds off your first book, which focused on statues here on Oahu.
There's a lot of memorials that are very beautiful pieces of art that are located on the neighbor islands. So they have fewer statues than what we do on Oahu, but they still have some very significant ones as well. We have a Captain Cook, you know, we have the book cover is Kamaka Hale, who is the mother of Kamuali'i, the last chief of Kauai. But the memorials were of two or three types. One of them was to all the immigrant groups. Many of the Japanese or Chinese or Filipino, or even I found a Scandinavian memorial on Maui, people wanting to honor their ancestors who had come to Hawaii and built it into what it is today. Not just physically with the things they built, but their character, their decision to make this their home. And so I wanted to share those stories, and a lot of people opened up their histories to me, which was really valued.
So talk about your favorite sculpture.
Well, I think my favorite is the Kalakaua in Hilo. There's a park in downtown Hilo called Kalakaua Park, but this depiction of him, rather than the military style uniform that we have on the Oahu statue of Kalakaua, has him with an ipu, and he's just a very Hawaiian depiction of him, and it's very beautiful for that reason. So that's probably one of my sentimental favorites, but I'm also very fond of the Kauai statue monument to all the immigrant groups. It was done by Jan Gordon Fisher, who was a sculptor from BYU, and has many pieces around the island. And he also became a teacher, and some of the sculptors from Hawaii, including Kim Duffert, would have studied under him at one time or another. So he has a multiple legacy. Unfortunately, he's no longer alive.
And talk about the unexpected surprises when you were photographing and going to talk to the communities about, you know, their memorials and their statues.
Well, I think two things. Number one was how many there were, and that they aren't always in plain sight. I think I was concerned about the vulnerability. It became even more urgent to capture their stories in a book form and let people read about it before they're gone. And the best example of that is just before we went to print, we had the Lahaina fire, and there are four statues that were damaged in the fire, and two of them probably lost. So you just see how important it is. People put up a memorial because they want you to remember something. They want you to tell you something about a person who was important to you or a set of events that were important to you. And so to lose them is just like a double tragedy, to not have that memory that someone, you know, paid to install and have made. And Kim's been a great contributor to the whole culture of monuments and sculptures in Hawaii. And a lot of people don't know this about him, but I'm glad your story is covering it. He also has done a lot to restore statues that, you know, maybe were purposely harmed or just were decaying. And a lot of people go to him to repair, fix, refurbish, add a base that tells more of a story. And so he's a real contributor in that way. In fact, the statue down in Thomas Square, he made the base. The artist was unable to, you know, be here for the base to be erected, so he turned to Kim, and a lot of people don't know that. I actually met Kim when they were dedicating the statue of Gabby Pahanui, which he made, this down at Beach Walk in Waikiki, and he was just quietly off on the side, and I went over and introduced myself, and I said, I want to interview you for my book. So he's become a friend, and I treasure the work, not only his piece work, but really his contributions to culture in Hawaii, which is what my books are trying to share with others.
Yeah, so I guess we will just have to wait and see how the statues in Lahaina fare, you know, if they can be saved and restored in some way.
Well, one of them is the bust of Kamehameha III in front of the school by the same name. Now, a temporary school has been made. The pictures that we see in the newspaper, you could see the bust still standing while the structure of the school was really no, couldn't even be refurbished. So I've been trying to, anybody who gets the opportunity to go into Lahaina, I ask them, could you ask somebody from DOE, or you'd like to know, are they able to put it in the temporary school, or, you know, are they taking care of it? But we also had a Sun Yat-sen bust at the Wohing Society, which we know is gone. We know that that was lost. We have a Shinran Shonin, which I think was lost, and then someone said, no, I was there, and he showed me a picture, and you could see pieces of it in the background, so that may have survived. And miraculously, the Damien at Maria Lanakila Church, which is a very unusual depiction of Damien, the fire skipped around that church and did not harm the church. And the vicar of Maui for the Catholic Church told me that the statue also survived, but I haven't seen it. They have not been able to go back into the church or the campus of the school there. So we have hope. We have hope that, we'll be able to see them again.
Okay, but it just makes the work that you've done here that much more meaningful, because if we've lost them, we have these at least.
In some cases, these are probably the last pictures of them, because I did have a photographer from Maui go back and take some pictures, and Lahaina is one of the places where he went back and took them, and that was in July last year. So it's been a joy, you know, the people I've met, the stories I've learned, and the opportunity that Mutual Publishing has given me to share them with people on other islands.
Sharing them with people and uplifting their spirits. And so we leave you on that note of hope and peace. Soon's book, Remembering History and Honoring Culture, is available through Mutual Publishing. She tells us that events are planned on the neighbor islands as part of the book launch in the months to follow, so stay tuned. And that's it for our show today. We hope you enjoyed hearing the stories. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday for more of the conversation. Now back to Savannah and Sophia at the pitch table.